Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I'm your host, Rado Palamariu, Managing Director of Elkut Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. Hence, it is my pleasure to have with us today Graham Parker. Graham is the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder at Containers, which is a software as a service company serving carriers and forwarders with their own branded platform, allowing their clients to get instant rates, book cargo, and manage all shipments online on any internet-enabled device. Containers was awarded the best global digital ocean freight platform by Frost & Sullivan, and it boasts a quarter of the 20 largest shipping lines in the world that are currently using their system to power their own branded platform. Graham, pleasure to have you with us today, and thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me on, Radu. We're all fans of the show at Containers.
Super. And you know, in particular, I want to thank you that you're joining us from, you know, from Africa today. So I want also to share with our listeners that, you know, that you're one of the most well-traveled CEOs at the moment. There's a high demand for containers all over the world, which is great. And maybe start by telling us a little bit about your beginnings, you know, how you ended up in, freight forwarding in the first place, and how you ended up to also build and start Containers.
Sure. So I did business in college, Radu, in Ireland, where I grew up, and I dropped out halfway through to the dismay of my parents, and I was fascinated by shipping, by the globalization of it, the nature of global currencies and commodities, and you know how it connected the world. So I was lucky that our family had a connection in the shipping industry, and I jumped right into a job there. And I spent 2.5 years there, really learning the ropes of operations. I started out as an export clerk, you know, pushing bookings and understanding, you know, how the industry really worked. I was fascinated by it. I absolutely loved it. And when I was 22, 2.5 years in, I decided, you know, I could do this myself. So I set up my first freight forwarding company and set myself a crazy goal of doing $1 million in sales in the first year. And I managed to do it. And then I doubled it every year. So I went from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 million dollars in revenue over the next half a decade, and was really fascinated by, you know, helping companies in their supply chains. It was around the time where SaaS was becoming a real thing, and it was, you know, a really great learning curve. I got to travel the world. I spent a lot of time in China, visited 5 to 10 times a year, and it was, you know, a fascinating time leading up to the kind of birth of Containers.
Oh, super. And always, you know, always fascinated to hear stories of, you know, of people dropping out of school and building businesses. There seems to be a pattern in some great entrepreneurs. And thanks for sharing that with us. And I also wanted to kind of probe, even if it's not going to make the subject of our conversation today. But I know that you're also an investor in Revolut and in Monzo, which are two of the largest fintech payment platforms. I think Revolut is a multi-billion dollar company already. And I wanted to also to ask you, and obviously you're based in London, right? So you're from London originally. But how did you also end up investing in these companies?
So I'm actually from Ireland originally, but we set up the business in the UK back in 2014. And, you know, as a software company in that ecosystem of the UK between Newcastle and London, we were, invited to a lot of events, and we saw a lot of great companies. And we were lucky enough to see, Revolut in the very early days. And, you know, we were fascinated by how fintech effectively was what freight tech could look like in a decade. You know, you could see how the industry had matured, how, you know, groups of companies had come and had cornered different parts of the market, how there had been, you know, 20, 30 different companies with $1 billion valuations. And, you know, it was absolutely fascinating to see. And I was lucky enough to get an opportunity to invest in Revolut and Monzo in their early crowdfunding campaigns. And, you know, it felt that they were going to be very successful. And now, you know, Monzo just broke 2 million, and Revolut are at 5 million users. So it's incredible success stories, and you know, traveling the world, you can see the cards almost everywhere now. So it was great to see, and for us it was a parallel between what fintech is today and what freightech will be in a few years.
No, fascinating, and fingers crossed. Yeah, I mean, also for us being part of the transformation right now, it's definitely exciting. And also, if we look at, and I was reading some statistics recently, if we look at the amounts of money and funding that is being put into freight tech at the moment, it's kind of the growth is very, very significant. It's very similar in some ways with the growth that fintech experienced a few years ago. So I think we are on the same type of tangent, and hopefully we will achieve the same type of results. I wanted to go into containers a little bit further. So basically, you provide that interface between the, you know, the 3PL, the shipping line, and their clients, and you shared that you brought down the cost of digitalization quite significantly in this industry that's used to having that middleman, and basically you wanted to do this switch to a digital interface because it is obviously the obvious step. Now, can you tell us a little bit, because there is also a step that involves a lot of anxiety because the processes, the steps in the freight forwarding industry and the shipping industry are quite, let's say, age old and tested, and sometimes it's quite paper based. So how do you convince your clients to use your service? And also, you know, are there some benefits that are quite straightforward, like cost cutting? I think you can save quite a lot of money by using containers. So maybe tell us a little bit, one or two case studies as well.
Sure. So I think for us, Radu, right from the birth of the company, we were very lucky in that, you know, my freight background and my co-founder, Charles Lee, is a Cambridge educated computer scientist, and he was part of the team that remapped the human genome. He was also involved in GSK's online patent portfolio, bringing it online in his 20s. So he's like 100 times smarter than me. He has brought, you know, incredible software learnings, and he's built a world-class team in containers on the software side. And, you know, right from the get-go, that marriage of deep industry knowledge and technology has really allowed us to look at the industry differently than a lot of other companies, because we've got those two disciplines together at the core of the business. And we believe that actually looking at it, you know, We believed a couple of things. First of all, that freight forwarders would win. You know, we believe that freight forwarders and all freight brands have a distinct advantage, and they've got significant customer bases built up over years and decades that literally cost billions to replicate. They've got global networks that also take years, if not decades, and a lot of money, and also deep industry knowledge, and augmenting that with modern SaaS tools, we believe will help to win. And we saw that most of the investment was going into non-customer facing tools, so a lot of back office software that is obviously important, but the customer doesn't get a benefit. You know, the customer still has to do a lot of manual phone calls and emails. So we wanted to build a new layer, effectively reinvent the genre of software that would allow freight brands to have their own branded shop front, if you will, to allow them to have pure digital interactions with their customers. So that was our our pitch from the start, and we were lucky enough that we decided to go from the top down. So we decided to launch our flagship product, Enterprise, back in 2017. So our flagship product, Enterprise, as an example, our top five customers, our software will power more than 1 million transactions next year. And we were lucky enough to work with big companies right from the get-go, including Maersk. So, you know, Maersk made a comment that working with containers accelerated their digital journey. And, you know, that's quite an accolade to put on a young enterprise software company like us. Maersk are not just the biggest mover of ocean containers in the world, but they're also very much the most advanced technically. You know, they've been building solutions for decades now. So that was a big accolade for us, and it really helped us to to win more of the big forwarders and carriers. And, you know, that idea of going from enterprise to smaller ones, while it was difficult from a customer acquisition and product phase, it's really paying dividends for us now, you know, because we've got the brand, we've got the product, and we've got those case studies from the likes of Maersk as well. So it's an interesting time at the moment.
No, for sure. I mean, having Maersk in your list of clients helps a lot, and it also proved that you can address from very, very large customers to smaller ones. But I'm curious, maybe to, let's say, if you're talking about Maersk, or if you're talking about mid-size, maybe freight forwarder, do you have some examples of how you managed to save costs? I think you also speak on your, I watched the video with yourself, that by the cost of paying a salesperson per the yearly salary, you know, that's pretty much the cost of containers, and then you know, the benefits that containers bring. So if we were to get a bit more practical for our listeners, maybe you can share with us one or two case studies and some of the, you don't need to give names necessarily, but some of the benefits that the clients got.
Absolutely, Radu. So first of all, I guess in terms of having these solutions live, having your own branded, customized solution, first of all, on the operations side, it saves on average about 40% of the transaction costs. So on average, we would see each file being touched 15 times, and post containers, that's down to around 5. So because it's an automated process, operations can concentrate on the high-end tasks. And what that means for the forwarder is the customer has a much better experience, and operations can concentrate on the high-end tasks. So they don't have to worry about, you know, confirming shipped on board or giving updates on bills of lading or approving bills of lading. It's all done through the platform digitally in real time. So from an operations point of view, cutting the file cost by 40% is significant for our customers, coupled with the customer experience increase. And then secondly to that, we also see customers looking at it from a sales point of view. So now you have a tool where customers can get access to rates 24/7, 365 on any internet-enabled device. So again, it cuts the cost of pricing and sales, but importantly, it allows sales to spend more time closing deals and not punching out rates or checking rates for customers and for pricing teams, endlessly sending out Excel sheets. Customers can access that data. They can access their own personalized rates in their account, again, across any internet-enabled device. So we've seen some fantastic case studies of cost savings on the sales side as well. I would probably put it an average of around 33%, one third, so a little bit less than operations. And then, you know, added to that, I would also say that we're seeing freight forwarders being usually innovative, you know, coming up with brand new ways. So when the platforms go live, they have their own API key. So they're giving their customers a great experience. And now they're using that API key and they're going to the banks and saying, can we plug in a trade finance tool? Can we plug in a marine insurance tool? And it's actually opening up brand new revenue streams for freight forwarders. And, you know, where maybe there's pressure on the arbitrage of rates, these are brand new revenue streams. The customer is going through a booking. It's a customer they've had for a long time. The customer ticks a box, they get a trade finance option. They tick another box, they get immediate marine insurance options. And it's brand new revenue streams for the innovative freight forwarders. And we think it's very exciting.
Fascinating. And this basically works for, it can work for a 50 staff freight forwarder as well as to a thousand, several thousand or tens of thousand staff type freight forwarder. It doesn't really matter. Your platform is just as applicable, and you let them basically, the whole interface would be customized by their own brand, right? So I mean, it's basically it looks as if the client is using their system.
Exactly. It's true enterprise grade software. So in real time, through their admin portal, they can go in and change the look and feel. They can approve new users. They can make changes on their terms and conditions. They can literally control every aspect of the platform. So it gives the freight forwarders the ability. And like you mentioned earlier, Radu, previously, this software was only available to the really big players. customer-facing solutions would normally have cost millions of dollars and taken a year or two. And now we're delivering them, you know, for a much lower price point in just 4 weeks. And our mission is to get these products into the hands of every freight forwarder on the planet in the next 18 months to allow them to be, you know, to tick that digital box and to be able to continue to do what they do best. You know, we think that's exciting and it will have a big impact on where the market goes.
Mm. Okay, so I'll have two questions just to play a little bit the devil advocate. So on one side is maybe this is less of a devil advocate question, but obviously we live in a world where, you know, Flexport, where Freight Hub, where Zen Cargo, and there's quite a few. I mean, let's just use this term. It may not be the correct label, but people maybe call them digital freight forwarders. How would you say, and we got this question, you know, is containers similar to Flexport and Freight Hub and Zen Cargo and all of that, or do you basically help, again, I'm going to use some label. I mean, I don't know how to call it actually. Do you actually help freight forwarders compete with those companies? Let's put it this way.
Yeah, so Containers is an enterprise software company, and you know, every part of our company, 75% of our company are engineering and technical talent. So we're a software company in our DNA, and we exist to enable the shipping brands to compete in this kind of acceleration of freight technology, and you know, I guess, to an extent, yes, these digital first freight forwarders are coming to market with a lot of money. You know, they don't have any legacy. They're building ultra modern solutions. And we're, you know, basically saying to the freight brands, you know, we can provide you the same technology at a competitive price point in a matter of weeks with, you know, without a lot of expertise needed on the freight brand side. So I guess we're looking to, you know, we would see ourselves as enablers. And we would see the digital first freight forwarders as disruptors. So, you know, that would be where we would see the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. And then my second question would be, and thanks for that clarification, my second question would be related to the time, right? Because 4 weeks to implement containers almost sounds too good and too fast to be true. And I'm sure that a lot of listeners would be like, how is that even possible in 4 weeks? Because we're used to, you know, implementations, and then, you know, I don't want to name any big software companies that take months, if not years. So how did you manage to do it in 4 weeks?
Well, you know, our enterprise product, I mentioned earlier, like our top five enterprise customers, our software will power more than 1 million transactions in 2020. Every one of those solutions were delivered in 12 weeks. On time in different parts of the world. So, you know, we've done it for the biggest shipping brands in the world in just 12 weeks. And that was probably the biggest question we had from them. How can you deliver these solutions in 12 weeks when a lot of our existing vendors take, you know, 6 to 18 months to deliver solutions? And it's a similar question on Edge, where we deliver it in 4 weeks. And I guess it goes back to the core of the platform. It's a multi-tenanted solution. So effectively, every brand has their own tenant that's customizable. And right from day one, when they sign up, that tenant is actually live and it is available to be updated during that 4 week process. So I guess the advantage we have is that the solutions are already built. The 4 week process is actually about customization, education and training. And, you know, just today in the Australian press, we've announced a great reseller with a company called Mizzen, and they've announced, you know, a customer called Calgan, a great freight forwarder in Australia, who will enjoy the benefit of going live on Edge in just 4 weeks. So I guess the secret, Radu, is as an enterprise software company, we already have the software built, and effectively the 4 weeks is just about, the customization element. So that's how we're able to do it. And we believe that that's very important. And actually, we want to bring that time down. We have a product coming the end of the year called Essentials, which will be even faster. And it'll be tailored at the very, very small freight forwarders. Think of it as Squarespace or Wix for freight forwarders. So, you know, we believe that the time will go down. And we also believe that the industry needs these SaaS solutions. You know, if you want a CRM, you can go and get your credit card and sign up for Salesforce in a couple of seconds. As the industry and freight technology evolves, you will see more of these SaaS solutions that are just super easy to implement. There's no on-prem, there's no long lead times. And I think that would be further transformative for freight forwarders and shipping brands in general.
Yeah, I mean, it almost sounds, I mean, again, it's exactly on the point that you mentioned, because people are used to a certain speed and a way of doing things. It sounds amazing. And if you're able to do that, I think, I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, it's incredible, because again, as I shared, I think a lot of people, most people, myself included, in the industry and most industries are used to very long implementation cycles for whether it is software as a service type of platforms or their own in-house or whatever it may be. So you being able to do that in a matter of 4 to 12 weeks, it's already almost unthinkable. So and the more of these case studies you will have, I would definitely encourage you to make a big bang out of it, because then, and I'm sure that you will, because then more people will come.
Absolutely.
But I'm just also kind of thinking, if I'm to think ahead, then in this way, let's say that this is just a thing, that question that comes into my head. That the more freight forwarders, I mean, it could come to a point where all freight forwarders and shipping lines use your use your platform. Then, was there? How are they going to compete? Almost, I mean, it's a question. I'm not sure I'm formulating the question correctly, because then it boils down to also the operations, the back end, the way they move, the way they their processes and all of that. Right? Because if you have the same interface, or, I mean, it's their own brand, but it's the same interface with their clients. How and what will make them the competitive advantage for them?
Yeah, I think to be honest, Radu, if you fast forward 18 months, I think most freight forwarders and shipping lines will have this capability to interact in a modern digital way. So allow their customers to get access to rates on any intra-enabled device, the world-class user interface, one click for rebookings, a series of dashboards and analytics. I think everyone will have these. If it's not containers, it will be other solutions. You know, we see competitors coming into the market every day now. And I think you're right. I think there will come a day where this will not be a competitive advantage anymore. This will be, you know, a requirement, the same as, you know, having email was two decades ago. And I think then, yeah, it's absolutely, it's all about how freight brands think about the technology. I mentioned earlier, we had, you know, a big freight forwarder in Germany come to us and say, okay, we'd like to use our API key to go to a bank and offer trade finance solutions. And they're making as much on trade finance as they are on the freight. You know, a brand new revenue stream they couldn't have imagined 5 years ago from existing customers with the click of a button. And this is the power of the internet. And this is where it's actually a real opportunity. This is where it's not a threat to freight forwarders. The ones that are embracing it, the early adopters and the innovators, they're the ones that are really maximizing the opportunity. So I think the ones that continue to be innovative, you know, will be the ones that will really use this technology to their advantage. They'll use it to scale globally at a much lower cost. You know, there won't need to be an army of people on the ground everywhere to open new offices, to get a new footprint. You know, that's where we see the market going in the next few years, Radu.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about your cost model, right? Like, how do you, I mean, it's somewhat an obvious question for most SaaS platforms, but let's just go into it, because we've gotten this question from our audience. So how do you charge, actually? And you know, how do you make money?
So we charge, in typical SaaS, it's a monthly subscription. So we basically charge an all-inclusive monthly subscription fee, you know, that makes it very transparent for our customers. So it's one fee per month. So it's unlimited transactions. It includes hosting, maintenance, and upgrades. So we did 36 upgrades last year that come for free. Air freight will be a free upgrade at the end of this year. So it's a simple monthly subscription model as typical SaaS, and it gives our customers a lot of visibility and that their fixed costs as well.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And one of the, I mean, one of the very specific challenges that tends to be in the industry, right, is the challenge of having the software which gathers rates and schedules both from carriers directly and those delivered to forwarders at almost instant in an instant way, because also the market can vary quite significantly, right? And these rates can fluctuate and can go up and down, and it's not that easy to have that software to do it in a good way. How did you, or how do you currently tackle this challenge?
Yeah, that's a good point, Radu. And I think, you know, for us as a modern platform, we operate with about 52 APIs. So every facet of what we do is available as an API. And that's great. You know, for example, on rates, we work with a lot of our bigger customers on rate APIs, which is really great. It helps rates being pulled in real time and updated. And the same on schedules. We've been pulling around 1 million sailing schedules a day for 4 years now. So we don't just have all of the world's schedule data from multiple sources, but we're able to run algorithms against them to understand likelihood. But we also see the reality is that the industry is still running on a lot of EDIs. So we've had to work with a lot of older EDIs and just build out those capabilities. But we also try to use our API first focus to help customers where possible, you know, in terms of upgrade. If I look at the top five ocean carriers right now, you know, practically every single one of them has made incredible strides on APIs over the last 2 to 3 years. It's just been incredible to see, you know, how they're all adapting almost towards an API first culture. So I think the industry being a little bit behind compared to some other industries, there is still a lot of legacy, there is still a lot of EDIs, but the work that's going on behind the scenes, particularly from EDIs to APIs, is incredible. And, you know, a lot of people don't always appreciate that, you know, EDIs are technology that go right back to the 1960s, I believe. You know, and, you know, no matter how great the EDI, you can only pull data on a basis, maybe an hourly basis, but often once a day. APIs are real-time swapping of data. So be that a rate, a schedule, a booking confirmation, it can happen in real time. And it can really help deliver an incredible customer experience. You know, and that's what we're looking to be for the freight forwarders, to help them to deliver a world-class modern digital customer experience.
Mm. Got you. And you did mention that air freight will be part of the system, and actually we got this question. So this is going to happen, you said, this year. Is it going to happen this year or next year, or how soon will you be able to?
Yeah, it's going to happen this year, Radu. We already have a top 10 forwarder that we work with that we're working on air freight with already. So we can already do air freight bookings. We're working really hard on the pricing side right now. I know some of the airlines have been slower than the ocean lines to adapt towards APIs and real-time pricing, which is very important in air freight, because when you want to make an air freight booking, you know, you need to make sure you're on that aircraft. So we've been working very closely with our customers, particularly this year. And we'll have an exciting air freight module in the market by the end of the year.
Mm. So is the fact that the API, would the APIs be the biggest challenge in terms of getting more accurate and good data from the airlines? Or what do you think is the biggest, I mean, when you go into the air freight market, what's your biggest challenge in terms of getting the accurate data that you need?
I think one of the things that customers love about the containers products is, you know, when you get to viewing your rates, be that spot rates or contract rates, the data is integrated with all of the available sailing schedules. So you get this kayak style view of, you know, Singapore to Hamburg, all of the different rates, but also all of the different sailing schedules. And customers love that view. They get to see all of the different options, and a significant amount of them are not after the cheapest price. They're after a certain ETA, a certain ETD, a certain cutoff time. And on the air freight side, it's even more important, because on the ocean freight side, we use an airline style model where we can actually use an allocation to count down. So if a carrier or forwarder has a certain allocation on the ship, once that allocation is sold, it disappears off the platform. And it means the customers have a great experience because what they're booking is going to be confirmed. On the air freight side, it's more difficult. The airlines need to have APIs to direct space available on that aircraft. So if a customer makes a booking, it's confirmed, you know, and similar on the schedule side. So I think the world's first air freight API was made available by Air France KLM. In conjunction with Freightos earlier this year. And we know, you know, a lot of the other airlines are working really hard, particularly some of the US airlines. So we think that, you know, once those APIs are available, customers will be able to have a great experience where they'll be able to view real-time inventory on an aircraft, real-time pricing, make your booking through APIs and get instant confirmations. Because I guess, you know, the nightmare scenario is, you go online to the air freight product, you see a price and aircraft that suits your needs, you make the booking, and 2 hours later it gets rejected. So that's been important for us to actually get a good air freight product to market. And I think the airlines are now getting to a really strong stage and having those APIs available.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost... I mean, looking back historically, it's interesting how we've been having that capabilities for passengers, right, for airlines for a long time. I mean, in terms of, you know, booking your own seats and all of that, and still for the air cargo, it's quite a bit behind. So I know that at IATA is working on a lot of things and a lot of kind of joint efforts to create these industry standards as well. And yeah, it's I don't know how quickly it's going to happen, but it's good that there's some steps being taken. One question we got, and I know it's a term that gets thrown around a lot these days, is on artificial intelligence. But let's just try and bear with me. So I'm meaning mostly, I think it's mostly algorithms and machine learning, and you know, this kind of smart way of predicting things. So one of the listeners said that you, and I don't know, I mean, he said that Container mentioned that you were leveraging AI. So his question was, he would like to understand how you're using this type of algorithms and artificial intelligence or machine learning in your software, if that's to be, can be shared.
Yeah, sure. So I think I listened to my co-founder speaking a lot about this. You know, he's built a world-class team of architects and computer scientists around him. And you know, you need, I hear him talk a lot about the need to have a significant data in the industry. So I hear my co-founder speaking a lot about this. The AI name gets thrown around a lot, Radu. And I think we're, you know, aware that you need huge data sets to actually utilize AI properly. And for us, even though Freight has huge data available, you know, I'm not sure we see big enough data sets to actually utilize AI today. However, we do use machine learning in different parts of the platform. So, you know, machine learning, I guess, is needs less data and can help provide an even better experience. So to give you some examples of where we use machine learning is when a customer is logged into their account, it becomes more and more familiar with their processes and how they do things. So to give you a few examples, when they log in and make bookings, depending on how the booking is made, it will start to preempt some of the booking fields. So who the consignee may be, because that was the consignee the last time they booked to Singapore. It will greet them when they log in and say, "Hey, Radu, would you like to approve your bills of lading?" Because that's normally what you do on a Tuesday afternoon when you log in. And when you get to the dashboard, machine learning is a great tool to be able to give some really detailed analytics. Because now the data that's been trapped in lots of emails and Excel sheets is now all in one platform. And you can start to show the customers analytics, you know, orders to the Middle East quarter two versus quarter three, percentage of orders shipped, on time ETA. So you can use a lot of machine learning there, and we utilize that, but we don't see big enough data sets yet to use AI.
Got you. We got this very interesting question, and I mean it's a bit tricky for you to answer it, so I'll throw it to you anyways. But the question goes: what would be your piece of advice to the CEOs of the top? Well, it was the top three global forwarders, but to be honest, I think top 20 would do just as well. So, what would be your piece of advice to the top 20 global forwarders, to the CEOs of the top 20 global forwarders? In terms
That's a
of
tough one.
implementing digital solutions, and I mean,
Yeah,
without overselling
sure.
containers, of course, but of course,
Yeah.
apart from buy containers,
Apart from buying containers. Absolutely. So yeah, I think to be fair, all of the top forwarders, almost without exception, we're lucky enough to be talking to probably 50% of the top 20 freight forwarders at sea level. So, we get really great access to understand what's happening. And it's fair to say I can't think of an exception offhand where the digital acceleration isn't significantly faster than what it was last year. So that's the first thing. I think every single one of them see this as an opportunity and a challenge. So I think, ensuring that it's getting increased spend on budgets. That projects are actually delivering. And if I was to give one piece of advice, it would be, if you look at SaaS tools, I think they really are the secret to success. We talked earlier, Radu, about how it's hard to get projects live and you've got long implementation times. If you're a top forwarder and you've got a project that's going to take 12 to 18 months to deliver at a critical time, where there's a lot of disruption in the industry, there's more and more SaaS tools available that can give you an impact on your business in a much faster time frame. And I saw a statistic from, I think it was HP recently, talking about how, the average customer now has 50 to 70 different SaaS tools in their business. And I think, freight forwarders can utilize more and more mature SaaS tools, right down to early stage ones. So, tools like Slack and, that are about to IPO have made a tremendous difference in organizations. And my view would be to try implement some SaaS solutions, to understand where immediate value can be brought to the business and to the customer. Obviously, there's still a need to do some longer term projects as well, but I think in terms of thinking about SaaS is great, and also thinking about having one project is probably not going to be enough. Containers is a complementary solution to back office. So, we often say to forwarders, if you're getting a back office solution, this is a totally separate conversation. So, having multiple projects live, I think now is vital for the top 20 freight forwarders.
Very good inputs. And if I'll move towards the next section, and we'll closely draw we'll soon draw an end. But the section on hiring people, and the section on also close to my heart personally, but also which is critical to pretty much any business in general. And obviously, you being a software company, I mean, I'm guessing that it's not that easy to. I mean, you're very lucky to have found a rocket scientist in your CTO, and it's been a good match. But tell us a little bit in terms of your challenges and how you overcome them in terms of hiring the best programmers and getting them to work on containers as opposed to, I don't know, going and working for Google or I don't know who else they could be working for. There's a lot of tech companies out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's incredibly challenging, Radu. I think the market for engineers now is incredibly hot. I was in California last month, and I met some engineers who were, not very senior and were earning $400,000 and $500,000 a year with Facebook in California. So, the market is incredibly strong if you're an engineer. And what we talk about really is, we're doing something to make a dent in the universe, and we're looking to make our mark in the freight tech world. And to a certain genre of engineer, I think that's really exciting. You're part of the first 100 engineers that are working on something like this, rather than maybe in a Google or somewhere like that, where you're you know, number 10,000 or 20,000, then you don't get to have as much an impact. I mentioned earlier, we did 36 upgrades last year. We'll do around 50 this year. So engineers coming into containers are pushing their own code every week. You know, they're building and shipping features every, you know, every month. And that's incredibly exciting to be actually sitting, you know, in the kind of front row as such. You know, I think in the bigger companies, it's much more siloed and you don't get as much as an opportunity to express yourself. And that's what we tried to do. And particularly my co-founder has done an incredible job in finding the best tech talents. You know, we've got, I mentioned architects, computer scientists. We've got engineers that have gone through the IPO process with our companies. And that's really what appeals to them, you know, actually getting into an exciting a company at a very early stage and delivering your code and making a difference and your voice being heard. And I think that's what it takes. And, you know, my co-founder and I are incredibly passionate about the mission we're on. And hopefully that comes across to the teams as well.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm also quite jealous myself because we've started to, in terms of the salaries, some of these guys, I mean, I dropped out, just like yourself, I dropped out of computer science at university. So, you know, sometimes, you know, when I look, when I look at what I could have, what I could have made, but that is in the unlikely, positively optimistic scenario that I would have become so good at it, which I doubt that I would have. But it's fantastic. You know, some of these engineers and the very skilled ones, it's just incredible what type of salaries they get to make. And yeah, I mean, it's also fascinating from the human resources side of the business where we come from. The type of increasing requests that we're getting from clients that realize that they need to do things around it, right? So it's, I think they see it, whether it's large shipping lines, freight forwarders, you know, manufacturing companies, they see the need to develop this kind of capabilities, to have some data scientists to look into their processes, to have, I don't know, I think RPA is another, robotic process automation, because you did mention about the back office stuff is also an area that is pretty hot at the moment in terms of that. Yeah. So there's more and more interest in terms of attracting this type of talent, but not everybody is doing as good of a job. And I do believe that what you mentioned in terms of having a strong vision and you know, the co-founders like yourself believing in that and attracting people play a huge part. But yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. And you know, it's a big tough fight. So yeah, we all gotta give it the best shot that we have. And let me ask you, where do you see, you know, in terms of the skills? So let's talk specifically for the let's say logistics, freight forwarding, shipping industry. Let's take it like this. So from where you stand, from a more technology perspective, where do you see the skills that the industry as a whole needs, and what type of what should, you know, students learning, I don't know, supply chain or logistics now in university, what should they be looking at learning in the next 5 to 10 years to stay relevant?
I think if you look at the software industry, rather over the last, you know, 20 years, you know, I think a lot of the roles, you know, outside of engineering are going to become more and more relevant. So, you know, if you look at, say, project management, you know, that's a particular skill set that's very strong in the software world, as you know. So people that can actually manage projects, where, you know, we're very lucky in containers to have a great project management team led by our global program director, John McLaughlin, who's got 20 years fintech experience with the likes of Citibank and BNP. But I think that's a big skill set. And I also think, you know, I'm a salesperson before anything else, Radu. And I think coming from the industry, if we look at enterprise software sales and solution selling, you know, we can learn a lot about, you know, how to sell to shippers in the next decade. If I'm a freight forwarder, that is, you know, if you look at it today, a shipper is basically managing their business on a suite of SaaS tools. They're using, you know, Salesforce, they're using Dropbox, Office 365, right down to online banking. You know, and making their life easier and selling them solutions will become more and more important. So I think from a sales point of view in freight, I think upskilling yourself and thinking more about solution selling, enterprise sales, being more process driven, you know, thinking about customers, how you can actually add value. One of the things that we do in containers, rather, that's really exciting, is digital customer acquisition. So, you know, right now, a lot of freight sales is done over the phone and it's done face to face. And that, again, will continue. But acquiring customers digitally, you know, through email marketing campaigns and the like, we do a lot of this for customers, and it's very exciting. And also on marketing, Radu, I think there's huge opportunities for, you know, marketing graduates to get into freight. And again, like we spoke about in engineering, of course, if you're a graduate in marketing, you can go to a software company and apply your skills. But you can also come to a freight brand and, you know, maybe have a bigger opportunity to, you know, draw on a blank canvas and create campaigns and help to shape that brand. And, you know, we work very hard on that in containers, on our brand and the message that we convey and how we convey it across the different channels. So I think there's a huge opportunity in digital marketing and freight. You know, digital customer acquisition is still almost brand new in freight. So I think there's huge opportunities for people to get into the supply chain and freight industry. And dare I say it, may become a little bit more more sexy in the decade ahead, when it's more tech centric and you get interest from younger graduates that are in project management, that are in solution selling, that are in marketing, that may not be as interested in today, but as it undergoes this massive technology evolution that we see today, it'll become more exciting for them.
No, super. Final question from us, Graham. What would be some of the principles, maxims, quotes that you follow, let's say, in life and in business?
You know, I'm not sure if it's an actual quote, Radu, but you know, one of the most important things that we always think about in our business is you know, being very honest in what we do and also working super hard. So, you know, thinking about how we can actually add some value. I'm a big fan of a lot of the Churchill quotes, particularly the one that says, "Success is not final, failure is not fatal." It's continuing with courage is what's important. You know, I think that's an important one.
Mm. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Graham, thank you very much for your time. Thanks for all the sharing and for the good insights that you have imparted with us and good case studies. And also for, you know, for making the time, even if you're on the road and, you know, in Africa, and even if, you know, even if there's a lot of very, very exciting projects happening. So thanks a lot for taking that time, and wishing you a lot of continued success with containers in the months and years to come.
Thank you very much for having me on, Radu. As I mentioned, everyone in Containers is a big fan of the show. It was great to be on, and wishing you and the show and Alcott continued success. And thank you again.
Super. Thank you. Thank you, Graham.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radupalamariu.com/podcast for all the show notes, links and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.